or you can on your own extend this framework or take your own framework to solve the wave equation if you so want. Or of course, there are many other things you can do if you have already done that. For example, take it to a higher order of accuracy, maybe fourth order accuracy, etc., or calculate the energy, see how energy is conserved, quite a few things. I think what I should do in the beginning is very briefly review the notebook that we started on Wednesday, because you probably forgot most of what I did. Well, at least I forgot, so I have that as an excuse. In the beginning, there's a piecewise linear. No, it's going to be a bad day, sorry. There's a piecewise linear continuous function living on the domain 0 and 1, and we define the points, the y-coordinates of these values. And if there are 5 points, then we have 4 line segments. And when we do a calculation, we always use the number of line segments as an indicator for the resolution. Then a bit of Julia code, functions from a vector space. We can add and scale functions that will be important later. Might have to extend that to subtract functions from each other. This defines the x-coordinate, calculates the x-coordinates of the endpoints of the lines. The next function here, line index, is kind of the inverse of the one where, given the x-coordinate, we find out on which line that corresponding coordinate lies. Then here are 2 functions. The first function, sample PLC, takes a given function, a Julia function, and samples it at the points that we have. And then we get an approximation of that function that uses linear interpolation. And a helper function for linear interpolation was here. And then kind of the inverse of the sampling function, evaluating our PLC approximation at a given x-coordinate. First, we find out on which line index the point x lies. And then we calculate x, y1, x2, y1, y2 of the 2 endpoints of the line, and then use linear interpolation to evaluate the function at that point. Finally, the meat, the finite differencing part. We calculate the derivative of our piecewise linear continuous function. And here I'm using right biased derivatives, which is the right method to use if you solve the advection equation and the advection advects to the left. For the wave equation, you probably want to use center derivatives instead, which are more accurate. And I sketched that on the blackboard. Most points use the right biased derivatives. The derivative at point I depends on point I plus 1 and point I. Let's get the slope of the line, except the last point. For the last point, we can't use a right biased derivatives because there is no point further to the right, so we use a left derivative there. That gives the derivative everywhere. And then some example use. I take the function sine pi. So sine pi is a function that calculates sine of pi times x. You don't need to multiply by pi manually. It's also faster and more accurate numerically. I'm using that with a function that just uses 4 line segments. I mentioned last time, if you're debugging a code, it's good to make the errors as large as possible so you actually see the errors. No point in lying to yourself and trying to hide the errors and then try to find out what the actual errors are. Evaluating our approximation and the actual sine pi, quite similar. Error is about 6%. And this is quite large. The blue, obviously, is the sine function. And the red one is our approximation. You actually see the error. And that is that. Yes, that was that already. Very good. And next, we move on to the advection equation. I mentioned the point that if you solve a hyperbolic partial differential equation numerically, there's the idea of a state vector. The state vector contains all the information that you need to describe solution at one instant in time. And if you know the state vector, you know enough information to use that as initial condition to forward in time. So if you calculate the initial conditions, they must exactly define the state vector. And if you have an iterative scheme that is a time stepper, it needs to take you from one time step, one state vector, to the next state vector. And it's always very good to be quite clear about what the state vector is, because often you have different representations of the solution. Maybe you can choose different variables, maybe the velocity or the momentum to express some movement. And you should be clear about what the state vector actually is. Otherwise, when you look at an algorithm or derive an algorithm, then you say, oh, I'm using the momentum here, and from the momentum I calculate the velocity, and then the momentum again, and then it's easy to confuse yourself. Anyway, the advection state here is essentially just a function that we call u, and we also put in the advection state to current time so that we know at what time that solution actually lives. I'm sure that will prevent confusion later as we go on. And then I define a Gaussian with a width of 110 and set up initial conditions. It's just we sample the Gaussian on a given number of nines and then create the advection state at time t equals 0. And then just to play around with it, I call this initial condition S0, kind of a state at time 0. And plotted, it looks like this. And I used just 8 line segments. So you see this is a Gaussian, not quite. It has a large error. And then we can next was define the right-hand side. The right-hand side is any hyperbolic function is usually expressed in left-hand side and right-hand side. The left-hand side is just the time derivative of the state vector. The right-hand side then defines the PDE that you solve. And here we calculate it. The current state is passed in. We get the time, we don't actually need for anything, and we get the function out. We calculate the right bias derivative, call it ux, it's the x derivative, and then we calculate the time derivative by combining the x derivatives on almost all points, and then the last point where we don't use the derivative, there we impose a boundary condition. Of course, where you impose the boundary condition, and what kind of boundary condition you choose, that depends on the equation you're solving and considerations of numerical stability that Lewis discussed. I'm not going to repeat that today unless you have questions about that. Yes?
So the number of lines should be length minus 1.
So we have, say, 4 lines, and then we have 5 points, because each line has 2 endpoints. And here, there needs to be a minus 1. Very good. Aha. Sorry for repeating what you say, but at the blackboard, I'm always slow at thinking. Minus 1. Calculating this. And this is then a plot of the of the right-hand side for the initial conditions. That is where we left at the end of last lecture. So let's continue. The next step that I want to do is the time integrator that takes a solution at one time and produces a solution at the next time. And the other thing that we need to add is the driver. The driver is what I call it, calculates the initial condition and then iterates until the final time has been reached. To be continued, very good. Time evolution. Let's do time evolution. Hello? What? What is this? Okay. Then let's delete it like that. I don't care. The easiest time evolution method is what is called the Euler method. You have the state at time t, you calculate the right-hand side at time t, and then you just take a time step of delta t with that right-hand side. It has many disadvantages numerically, but it's the simplest method. Euler. So Euler, what does it take? It takes a... now let me think. It takes right-hand side, which is a function. So this Euler method is not for the advection equation. This is a generic time integrator. So we need to pass in the right-hand side routine. And we can use the advection right-hand side that we have here. You're passing in a time step size, dt, which is of type u, t, right? And we have the current state, which is, I don't know what type we should use here. And the result is another state. what the heck? Let's call it advection state here. Of course, it would work for everything, right? Not just the advection state. I should make it more general. I should define an abstract type for states. Should we do that? No, you don't want that. It's getting too abstract anyway. Very good. So we have S.
Sorry, one question.
Yes?
Don't we need the where T here again?
Oh, yes, we do. We totally do. And now these things don't fit on the screen anymore. Something happened here, right? Maybe my font is bigger now. Let's make it larger then. So we have the advection state at time t. First, we calculate the right-hand side. And now I need to cheat. I need to look up how we actually call the right-hand side. No, it's just like that. And then we calculate S1 equals S0 plus et times R0. Sorry. And this gives us S1. Now, of course, this assumes that we can add and scale the state vector. I call it a vector. It is a vector, but I don't think I've actually defined the respective functions for adding and scaling things. So I should probably add that, right? Or should we cheat again? No, we should not cheat. Man, I should have seen Giefer's face. But we have this from above here, right? I can just copy that. I don't need to think much about that. Sorry for the scrolling. I copy the function here. State vectors can be scaled and added. Then we have advection state of type T. Advection state of type T, where T. I should have given it a shorter name. This is amazing. And I'm going to call the state S, right? S time, comma A times S dot U. Looks good. And again, different state S, direction state at time T. And I call this T, now I don't call it U, call it S1. And S2, direction state at time t. Not going to fit, need a new line here. The result is an direction state at time t, where t. I don't need that. I'm sure something else will give me an error message. Because if we're going to add functions, that won't work. Then I have S1, oh. This only works if the times are actually identical.
Yeah.
And I'm comparing floating point numbers here. That's a bad idea, never do that. So we take the difference between the floating point numbers. And I think epsilon is a function that calculates the floating point accuracy. Epsilon, is it called eps? Called eps, okay. So we only allow an error of that is 100 times larger than the floating point accuracy. Then we use S1 time, and then S1u plus S2.u, where we add the functions because earlier we said functions can be added. U not defined, what is this? There you go. Now we can add state vectors, and now we should be able to write this one here. Let's do a test call. We call Euler of right-hand side advection with the time step size of what could we choose? Who knows? 0.1, and we pass S0 in, and the result is advec length DLC1. Where is this? Oh, man. Okay. I'm just looking where I'm using length here. Okay. Do you know where this error appears? Where I'm calling length on a PLC fun? You don't, right? Sorry. It's called an Euler. and then multiplying with an advection state. Okay, thank you. Let me look at that. So it's in the multiplication operator for the advection state. Okay, maybe we just need to define it, right? Why don't we define it? I go up to where the function is defined, and I define base.length of an advection function, which is an int where t, u equals length f.points. Why not? T not defined, what? Do you see the problem now? Maybe it defined it as a function. This is a bit more confused than I anticipated it to be. Apologies. Seems to work now. Very good. So let me scroll to the very bottom. Apologies for all the scrolling. Let's call the Euler integrator for iterate. Oh man, this is not good. This is not good. Why would it want to iterate? Let me check the definition of the addition operator for the state, advection state. Oh. Okay. When functions are multiplied, the way we defined it is just the regular multiplication operator. Sorry about all these details. Let's see what.
Eps are not defined.
It's eps. Sorry, it's just eps.
Ooh.
Yeah, then we have the next time.
Can you show the base length function?
Yeah, we don't need it, the base length, actually. It was just because I called the wrong thing. Let me comment it out here. So, what the length function did is just return the size of the vector, which is just the size of the array. So I said the length of a function f is the length of the array implemented the function, but we actually didn't need that. But now we have one time step, and now I can just plot the result. So we did one time step here. Let's put this in a variable s1, and then we evaluate s1. Then it looks like this. And let's compare it to the original thing which we had in S0. And then we see what the first time step did. And as you see, first, our solution is really, really coarse, right? Just 8 line segments. But nevertheless, something reasonable seems to happen. Namely, the solution moves to the left, which is good. And it probably becomes a bit wider, and we lose a bit of energy. There's dissipation. Of course, the error is huge, but it's not that qualitatively the wrong thing happens. It's not that the solution becomes larger, or that the shape completely changes, or suddenly we have a lot of noise on top of it. So this is pretty good.
Sorry, what was the problem again with length?
We don't need length. I had another bug, and the bug that I had was in the definition of the scaling operator for the advection state, which is up here, this one. I used dot star, and dot star expects two arrays. So Julia thought that the right-hand side, s.u, which is the function, is an array. So it wanted to know the length of array and how to iterate over an array, etc. But we don't need that, because we defined a multiplication operator. The solution was to use just the regular multiplication operator, and then everything is fine. I went off on a tangent here, the copy and pasted code, which one is not supposed to do. So this was one time step. And now let's call the driver, and we're going to call this solve, right? There is an initial, let's call it solve advection. There's an initial condition, and there's the right-hand side. This is, Right. If we solve the advection equation, it's kind of clear what we want to do. I think we just choose the type. Did we already choose the type up there? I forget. Sorry, I'm going to scroll up. I'm going to look up the initial condition. Yes, we do. I think we just choose the number of lines. And there's this parameter that Lewis called lambda, right? Which is of type t. And the final time as well, call it t max. So what are we going to do? We're going to have a state that we're going to set up. And we're calling initial Gaussian and lines. And this is now a bit disconnected because I don't really remember what I called all the functions. And here in this notebook, I have really big letters, so it's difficult for me to scroll up and down. I like to have two windows up side by side where I can look other things. I can't really do that here. And since you didn't write the code, you just watched me writing the code, it's probably even more difficult to follow what happens. So we have an initial condition. What else do we need to do? Let's calculate the time step size, right? Let's calculate dx. Dx is 1 over n lines. And then dt is lambda times x. You remember this? That we choose a lambda there, that is 1 over 4. And then the number of iterations, the number of time steps we need to do, let's call it n steps, is then t max, the final time, divided by dt. And we probably need to round that. So round int, this is for the number of steps. Now we have an initial condition, and now we need to advance it for a certain number of steps, for a step in 1 to n steps. And each time step size is, we're going to use the Euler integrator, Now I need to look up how to call that Euler thing. Right-hand side advection, the time step size, and the state. And of course, all the bits and pieces are already defined. This driver consists now only of the rather simple pieces, then we're choosing an initial condition and the Euler time integrator. And apart from that, that loop here is rather easy. What I now also want to do is, of course, collect the solution. Because I mean, it might be tempting now to add more things in here, kind of plot statements and IO statements and calculating energy and convergence factors. But I think it's easier if we just calculate a solution and put it in a 2D array and then we have it later, and then we can analyze it later. So how do you do that? You define a type. Call it solution, type t. And what do we put in here? Probably just a vector. States, it's a vector of advection state. So we just remember all the advection states that we got from the time evolution here. Should we remember something else in here? Sure, let's remember something else. Let's remember time step size, right? I don't remember the time, but that's probably a good idea. Or maybe the spatial resolution that we chose. Because when we want to compare different resolutions later on, it's always a good idea to kind of remember all these details. Then you can't accidentally forget what you choose. So let's then define here, solution, create a new one where we remember the x and dt and an empty array. This is an empty array, is it not? It probably is, let's check. And then every time we have a new advection state, we're going to add it. So this is push solution.states, s. And we're also going to do that in the loop here. And then we return the solution in the end.
So yes? You mentioned pushing in Julia is not very expensive, right?
Yes. So if you have an array of a given size and you change the size of the array, then you need to copy the elements of the array. But what Julia does under the hood, when you say, oh, I'm pushing, I'm adding one element, it actually, in turn, it doubles the size of the array. So if you have an array of size 100, then you need to copy all the elements one time, because the next 100 pushes are then essentially for free, because they already fit in here. So Julia still remembers how many elements are actually in there. It just allocates a bit more space for the array. And that's the most efficient way of just adding something, adding elements to an array.
Eric,
yes?
Here we don't have to define how to put. So the sentence that you use to define solve as a type solution already tells you how to build the structure.
Pardon?
Yes. I was wondering if we need to define a function that tells us how to put elements inside the types solution.
No, I'm just doing that. So I say this is the solution.
Yeah.
I look at the states and I append something to the states that we have stored in there.
But even two lines above, when you say solve equal to solution,
yes,
you include parameters, right? The x, the t.
Yes. This is just to remember the parameters later on.
No, but you're inputting concrete parameters, the x and the t.
Yes.
So you don't need to define a different function, even a type. Right?
You mean a constructor for putting things in here?
Yes.
So there is one default constructor by Julia. If you specify all the values for all the fields. So if I just specify the x, the t, and the states, this works with the default constructor. Because it's such a common case that you have a small structure with a few elements, and when you create it, you have values for each of the fields of the structure. But if it was more complicated, or for example, I wanted to say that I specify dx and dt's calculated automatically with some lambda, then I would have to define my own constructor, because there's no way Julia could know that. So let's call it. Let's go to tmax equals 1, 8 lines, and a lambda of 0.5. See what happens, right? No. Why not? Oh, did I not press enter here? Yeah, this is the fun of. Oh, look at that. Look at all these numbers. OK, I'm going to click here. That makes all these numbers go away. And now I'm going to do some plotting. How do I plot many things? Solution.states of 1. This is the first. Oh, no. This is an advection state, right? Then I need to get the function out and then evaluate the function at axis. Oof, I forgot how I did that. And then, was it like that? Oh, man. I'm just going to cheat and look how I plotted earlier. I'm going to use the same thing in here. Oh, like that. Okay, very good. So I'm just trying to plot the result here. Nothing special here. Just forgot how this worked. So this is my solution, states 1.u, and this is then the initial condition, which looks, okay, these numbers are annoying. Just going to put a semicolon here, they all go away. And then I'm plotting states 2, which is the next one. And states 3, which is the next one. Okay, this is also boring, right? You can do something else. For s in sol states 2 to end, and we're going to add one of the plots here. Let's call this state. and then we plot in state, this goes away, and then we see how the solution, what, nothing's happening, oh no. Another plot or something here? Oh, still thinking. Look how this goes. Nice. Nice. Of course, it uses different colors, but you see how the solution moves to the left, and the final solution, it is really small here because nothing is left. Of course, this is really coarse, right? We want to do the same thing with the finer resolution. So we're solving the advection equation. Instead of 8, let's use 100 points. There's the solution. And the solution is nicely wrapped in the solution. And we're going to plot it here. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Isn't that nice? OK, but I want only every 10th solution. Want to have fewer plot, but this is the wrong thing. How do I plot every 10th? Oh, man. Like this? Yeah, I probably want to start with 10 as well. There, nice. And now comes the advantage, because I put everything into types and into variables and so on, I can very easily hold two solutions at the same type. So for example, I want to compare different solutions, a coarse solution and a fine solution. Let's call it solution one and solution two. And solution two, I use 200 points. And then I have both solutions at the same time. And then I plot solution one and solution two. You know what? I'm going to introduce a function. If it's getting that complicated, plot solution. It has a solution. I don't care about types, right? Who wants that? A thing called every, and I put this in here. I need to indent. Does it work? Yes. No, it overwrites each other. Oof. Plotting is so difficult. This is incredible. This is where I'm stuck. I'm sorry. Maybe use an exclamation mark here as well. Is that better? Yeah, but no, don't see anything. But. Oh.
You still have the old plot?
I still have the old plot?
Yeah, everything is exactly
the same, so it's never. Good. Thanks for the pointer. I'm really getting stuck at plotting here. This is not what I imagined. Okay, now we need to add labels and everything. Okay, anyway, you see how it goes. I'm sure you can all sort out the plotting. I don't have the patience to do that right now. Do you have questions for this notebook? Otherwise, I wanted to show one other thing, and this is how to calculate the error between two functions, because I want to do that in a bit, in a nice way as well. And that means we need to revisit the abstractions that we chose earlier, and maybe introduce something there as well. Don't have questions for this. So this is how the solution moves to the left, and it probably looks better if I have more points here. Let me just do that, see whether the solution looks better. Yeah, it looks kind of better in the end. What I want to do now is subtract two solutions from each other. And if you remember, that's a bit complicated because you have these solutions and they live on different numbers of points and can't just subtract points from each other because these points might have different x coordinates. And also when you calculate the error, you kind of want to sum up over different points, and it was all a bit complicated. And I want to introduce to make that a bit simpler, a bit more straightforward, a bit more elegant. So one thing is, if you have solutions with different numbers of points, and then you can't really subtract them from each other. You can subtract things if they are vectors, functions are vectors, if they live in the same vector space. Since we have different numbers of lines, they live in different vector spaces. So we need to introduce a function that takes a fine resolution and coarsens it and puts it into the right vector space. And I think the right way to do that would be to introduce a function for that. Nobody complains. This is a really bad sign. I was hoping for a bit more. So I'm going to scroll up to the very first thing we did here, a piecewise linear continuous functions. And I remember that we have the definition with the points. We can scale things, add things, and we can sample it, and we can evaluate it, calculate derivatives. Here at the end, I'm going to add another thing, which I call the coarsen a function. We have a function which say four lines, and I'm going to convert it into a function that only uses two lines.
Why is this useful? I mean, you want to compare two functions that have different level of coordinating.
Yes.
But if you're going to make one coarser, you may lose resolution.
Yes. Yes. I wanted to go this way because that's the easiest way. We can do something else. We can make the coarse one finer, and then.
Are you assuming that the finer one is, say, two or four times finer than the other one? Are you
I assume, I was going to assume a ratio of two. Okay. But you're right. What one really should do is take the cross function and make it finer. Should we do that instead? It's not much more complicated. Let's call it refine. And we just going to take a function and make it twice as fine. And that's not difficult because you probably can't see it. But if you have a function here, then it's quite clear where we need to introduce the additional points. The additional points are going to be here. And it's quite clear where to place them because we already know how to linear interpolate there. So we're just going to do that. And then we have a fine function that represents the same cos function, we just have more points there. So the function that is represented doesn't change, but it now lives in the other vector space by being trivially extended to the finer vector space. Is this clear? People are bored? People are confused? Seems to be okay. Let's call it F2 because it's fine, and now I need to think, of course. And lines equals length of f dot points minus 1. I'm just copying that from above. And now we want to have twice as many lines. So we need to calculate, we need to linearly interpolate, right? So ys equals, we now need to find the values of the points for the new function. So it's going to be something for I in 1,2 times n lines plus 1. Okay, we need to get the new grid spacing. The old grid spacing is 1 over n lines. And the x coordinate at which we are going to evaluate that is this, right? There was this function x coordinate that we had that calculates the x coordinate of the point. And it takes as input the type we want for the coordinate and the number of line segments and then the index of the line segment of the leftmost point where we want to have that. That's the x coordinate. And now we're going to evaluate our function f at that point. You're not going to make an error that way. So it's evaluate, and I think it's just f like this. Is this too much in one line? Is this too complicated? Essentially, we are calculating how many points are going to be in the new function, and the new function has 2 times n lines plus 1 point. Then we, for every I, for every point, we calculate the x coordinate of the new point, and we're evaluating the function, the old function, at that point. And evaluation automatically does linear interpolation. So that works fine. And these are the new y coordinates. And then we are going to create a PLC function for that. We have some examples here. Let's just try it out. We have this function f sine pi. So let's try to define it. And let's plot it. Here we plot let's plot the original function and the refined function. The original function that we defined earlier was f sine pi, and that's only f sine pi 2. And as you see no difference between the functions. It's a bit boring. Can shift it a bit up. Does that help? Yeah, then you see that the new function and the old function, they look exactly the same.
Okay.
Yes?
Why is the top of these functions plus?
Yes, I was hoping you wouldn't notice because I don't know. I think there's something wrong with our linear interpolation, actually. Why else would it be like that?
No, but how many points do we have?
Yes, it should be linearly interpolated. So, but okay. I think I know what's happening. No, it's all clear. So we have a function that looks like this. Let's just take a function with three points. So it looks like this. And now we sample it for plotting. But for plotting, we sample it not on these points, but we just chose 100 points.
Okay.
So we sample it here, and here, and here, and here, and here, and here. And then if we connect all these points at which we sample, we cut off the top. So the way to solve that would be to sample at more points, then the plot becomes more accurate. I think if you change that to 1,000, it goes away. Oof, luckily it does. And of course, the another thing would be to just use an odd number. That would probably also help, because then we don't skip the points in the middle. Yes?
Question about the refining. So we evaluate our PLC function again, right?
Yes.
Give us the same value as we had before, because we basically have the linear interpolation. Then we find an experiment in between and evaluate it at the linear interpolation.
Yes.
Right? So that gives the same value as we had before.
Yes. Okay. The only thing is that we now have more points on the function.
Okay, so we
don't see any change. Exactly. That's what also demonstrated. And I just realized there's a much simpler implementation of the refined function. Because we could just evaluate the old function that gives us a Julia function. And then we could use sample PLC to get the new function. Because we already have a generic function to approximate a Julia function with a piecewise linear continuous function. I am not going to change that because this is not where I want to go. Okay, I'm now going to scroll to the bottom and going to just. Oh man, sorry about the scrolling here. This is not so easy. The idea is now to find out about the discretization error and about convergence. So I'm going to calculate two solutions with two different resolutions, and I'm going to subtract the solutions from each other, and this is then one measure of the error. So, oh man, sorry. So these are two solutions, one solution with 100 points and one solution with 200 points. I cannot subtract them from each other. If I calculate solution 1 minus solution 2, well, that doesn't work, right? Because we can only add and scale. Sorry, we need to write it like this. Then, really? What is this now?
The solution is a structure, is a type on each other.
Oh, yes.
You mean that you...
Sorry, I meant the initial state. Right? I mean, I don't want to scale the solutions. States. And then we get the error message because the two functions cannot be subtracted from each other because they have different numbers of lines. So what we need to do is we need to refine one of the functions and then we can subtract them from each other. Okay. This is now the difference between the solutions. Let's call me DS or UE for U error, and then let's plot this error. Sorry. I can't remember how to plot. Sorry, I have to scroll up again, find the plotting command. And this is how the error. This is weird.
And so you want to subtract.
Ah, very good. No, this is not weird. This is actually very good. I subtracted the two initial conditions from each other, and as you see, you don't see a scale here on the left, but the scale is probably 10 to the minus 15. So you see some floating point round of error. This is probably one bit changing, two bit changing, and then so on and so forth. Because for the initial conditions, they are actually the same. Now, let's go to the next time after one time step. And then the result is. No, this is, I'm very unhappy about that.
Wait, did we fix lambda?
Lambda is 1/2 in both cases.
Okay, so now you're going to jump faster in one solution than the other in time?
Yes, I was hoping that there was an error. So let's actually look at that. Now I'm comparing the times. Oh, I am. Yes, I forgot to do something. When we defined the solution, it captures the time, but we forgot to actually advance the time. So the time stepper, the Euler method, doesn't advance the time. So this is completely useless, which is why the error message doesn't appear. So let's actually add this to our Euler function here. So what we have here is an advection state of time t of time s naught dot time plus dt plus the result of u. Good. Now let me just evaluate everything here to the end. And then if I make an error here, nothing really, I'm annoyed. Then this is the error between two different solutions after one coarse time step or two fine time steps. I'm getting mostly silence from you. This is not good. Can you all follow it? This means it's either way too boring because you all did this 4 times fast before. So that means the code that I'm presenting here, I was typing much too fast while coding, and then you're not following. Yes?
I don't quite get what element of states you are calling for the 2 and 3.
Ah, so the solution remembers all the different states, kind of the time evolution of states. And state 1 is the initial time, and state 2 is the result after one time step, and state 3 after two time steps. So of the coarse solution, we take the first iteration, and of the fine solution, we take the second iteration. And I was hoping that if I compare different solutions at different times, that there would be an error, because the times don't match. But apparently, that's not the case.
Why would you expect this? I mean,
I thought we had this assert statement. If we want to add solutions at times that don't match, then that's an error.
But you are not fitting even the time, right? You are just.
Yes.
In that.
Okay. Let's. Anyway, we can just output the time, and we see that the times actually match, and that's good enough.
Yes, but I'm saying in 118. There is no reference to a time, right? You're just...
Oh, yes,
so
yes.
No chance it's going to complain. There's
yes.
Comparing vectors.
Yes, because I dived in there, because I... yes, thank you. Very good. Good. Okay. Let's calculate a third solution here with an even higher resolution, namely 400. And let's compare times again. And now we need to do four time steps here, all the same time. And then we have an error 1 is coarse minus medium. And we have an error 2, which is medium minus fine. Let's get it out. And then we can plot these both errors at the same time. This is error 1. And this is error 2. And then you see that the error 2 is only half as large as the error 1. And since we changed the resolution by a factor of 2, that means that the convergence factor is about 2. Mm-hmm. And we can do it at a later time as well, if we were to run the simulation for a longer time. I see that my presentation here takes a bit longer than expected. I wonder what you want to do next. Do you want to take this notebook and work on the wave equation? Or do you want me to implement a function that would integrate one of these functions? Because the equation that we want to evaluate is kind of the norm of the error divided by the norm of the other error. So which of the two? You lean back, close your eyes, let me talk, or you work yourself?
This is the last session.
This is the last session, yes. I don't want to overwhelm you. I want you to work yourself and ask questions if you have questions.
So it might be useful to work through these other differential equations, the second degree differential equation?
Yes. Wave equation. Do you want to work?
Wave equation?
Yes. Do you want to do that yourself, or do you want a hint from me about how to do that? Okay. So the wave equation, as Lewis explained it, was a second-order equation. You can break it down into a first-order equation by introducing new fields. Lewis called these fields F and G. And I introduced the advection state here. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Here, because this is a state vector for the advection equation. If you solve the wave equation, you get a wave state that is more complicated. It wouldn't have just one function, u, but it would have three functions, if you so want, namely phi, f, and g. Another way to implement that is to say that the wave equation isn't a scalar field, but it's a complex field. And then when we introduce the PLC fun, from t to u, it would not be a real number, but it would be a complex number, the phase and amplitude, encoding f and g, and phi would not be in there, because it's actually not that important. So this is a choice you have to make when you implement that. But then I recommend that you implement that, and you can match up in pairs if it makes it easier for you. And then, as usual, I'll walk between the aisles and help you if you get stuck somewhere.
Can you share this?
Yes. I'm going to restart run all. And if that's done in 1 or 2 minutes, I'm going to upload it to GitHub, overwriting the previous notebook, because it's essentially just an extension of the previous one.
Would anybody be interested in a 2-minute summary of how this works? I don't remember. What Luis told us, can you summarize?
The wave equation, how to do the wave equation? Okay.
Is that okay?
I can do that, yes. Do you want it on the blackboard or do you want it on the screen?
This information in some format.
Okay, let's do the blackboard then, because the computer is still busy. The advection equation was u dot equals u prime, and the wave equation is u double dot equals u double prime. And we now want to convert that into a system that has only first derivatives. So we introduce new variables. I want to keep the notation consistent. So we introduce with what Luis did. So we introduce one variable for u dot. How did Luis call them? Was it f or g? There's going to be more here on the right-hand side.
I think you said f was u prime.
Very good. F is u prime, and g is u dot. And then we need first-order time evolution equations for u, f, and g. So then we have u dot equals, f dot equals, and g dot equals. U dot equals, that's just the definition of g. Let's put that in. G dot is u double dot. U double dot is u double prime. U double prime is f prime. Oh god, which variable was it now, f or g?
G dot equal to f prime.
Oh yeah, of course, really. Yes, and f dot is going to be, f dot is u dot prime, is u prime dot is g prime. So you see that u is now essentially just an ODE. You can evolve f and g independent of u. You just need to know f and g as they evolve in time. And then kind of u, the additional equation, just piggybacks on the existing solution. And this is if you write the wave equation, you're using, I mean, you can write it just in these equations, and then you can calculate u later.
So is this something somebody figured out?
Yes, yes.
Or there was some, okay. The next equation that we have to solve, if we write f and g, it will all sort out by itself, and we'll end up with first order differential equation.
So this reduction here, you can always do that.
But if
you have second order PDE, you can always write it like that. Yes, but of course the particular system that comes out here, that is just the wave equation.
But
people figure that out.
How to derive that?
You need to think carefully, but it's usually straightforward how to do that. Of course, if you have the Maxwell equations or Einstein equations, it's more complicated. You can make more choices and so on. But it's not, I mean, this is not the difficult part. Of course, you can make lots of mistakes where you accidentally introduce some complexity that you don't need to introduce and so on. And this has similarities, for example, with the Maxwell equations. Maxwell equations look kind of similar. Instead of u, you get the vector potential big A. Instead of f and g, you get the electric and magnetic field. And if you write it as four vectors, this is then the Maxwell tensor. And if you write with the Einstein equations, then u corresponds to the metric, and this corresponds to the Christoffel symbols. Just roughly, if you think about derivatives and so on and want to have an intuition. Anyway, I mean, just forget that. You're not going to solve the Einstein equations. Oh. Okay. Now, your state vector now consists of u, f, and g. So you have three functions that you there. Oh, Luis called it phi, right? Yeah, sorry. Doesn't matter what you want to do. And the derivatives you're taking here, you showed me use center derivatives, not not right bias derivatives. So you need to update the derivative operator for that. And for the wave equation, if you remember, you also need boundary conditions on both sides, not just on one side. Yes?
We want a center derivative both in space and time, or just?
The derivatives you're taking is just space.
Yeah,
in the time direction, you also probably want to do something better. We use the Euler time integrator. There's a Runge-Kutta time integrator that you can do. So let me draw a line here. Yeah, if I pull this one down, you can't read this mirror. So let me try to squeeze it down here. The Euler time integrator means you have some time, let's call it t, and some other time, t plus delta t. You have a state here. You evaluate the derivative here. So at this here, you know u. You can calculate u dot. Then you take one step, and this is then calculated. Let's call this un. This is solution at time n. And then you have here un plus 1 equals un plus delta t times u dot n. Sorry, it is a bit small to read. But this is essentially what we did in the code. I should use a different notation. And there is a Runge-Kutta method, actually a second order Runge-Kutta method. There are higher order methods. Let's just call it RK2. Let me draw something bigger. This is time t. T plus delta t, and then you introduce the fictitious intermediate time, and there are actually many variations of second order Runge-Kutta. Let's call this time plus 1/2 delta t, and I'm telling you just the recipe. You can look up the literature, but this is explained much better. But the recipe is good enough for you to code this, where. How should I explain that? The idea is you have a solution here. You calculate a time derivative here. Then you take an Euler step to this time here. Then you evaluate the right-hand side here. And then you take a time step from the original time to the final time. From the right-hand side, you got here in the middle. And now let me think how I best write that in a nice notation. So I remember how the formula looks in my head, but unfortunately using a different notation. So I'm going to confuse you now. I'm going to use y and f, where y is the solution and f is the right-hand side of the solution. So that this has nothing, f has nothing to do with this one here.
Can we just implement that later? I mean, can you mention that later?
Oh yes, I can mention it later. Very good. You can also use the Euler method, and that's good enough. Yeah. Just if I explain that, you would know everything. But why don't you start with this? Very good. I updated the notebook on GitHub, so now you have access to this.